This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnat.
And I'm Luca Livitz-Meble.
And this week our topic is...
It is a special episode about the March 9th Apple event.
Okay, but before we get to that, do we have any follow-up?
I think you have some.
Right. So on the last episode, which we recorded from Japan, or I recorded from Japan, I forgot to mention something very relevant to one of our past episodes, which is about the episode where I talked about Japanese language learning and taking the Japanese language proficiency test. I got my results back when I was in Japan, and I forgot to mention it on the last episode. And needless to say, somehow I managed to pass a level N2.
Yay!
Japanese language proficiency test.
Congrats!
You can find a photo of my certificate in the show notes. another thing I forgot to mention on the last episode was something during my game development history that is actually relevant because it's sort of a weird fact that a lot of newcomers to the Mac don't actually know about. So let me ask you this, Lukaji. Do you know what the name Coco was used for before OS X existed within Apple?
Not really. I just know that the only Coco thing I know is Coco's 2D, but I'm not sure.
Nothing to do with it.
Yeah, obviously. So
there was another programming language within Apple from 1996 to 1998 called Coco. It was mainly for kids. And it allowed kids to create what they called simulations, in quotes, or little games, basically, by adding graphical sprites and giving them various properties and then rules with which either like key interactions could be bound to certain objects or when this object is at this grid coordinate, do this event with these other objects. So you could create those little kinds of games. And I actually used this when I was a kid. I just forgot to mention it because, as I may have mentioned on the past episode, I had the wrong version of my notes on my iPad. So I was going off an incomplete version of my notes.
And it seems to me that it's like a sprite kit for kids, what you're just explaining.
Yeah, but in 1996. So it was very, very primitive. You could save those simulations out to the web via either a proprietary Netscape plugin or eventually as a Java applet, which both of them shows you what era this was made in. And naturally, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, he killed it immediately. And you can go find an email on the Coco Dev mailing list, because previously the Coco Dev mailing list was about developing for this Coco and not the Coco frameworks. So there is a famous email that you can go look up on the internet where they say, yeah, we're going to change what this mailing list is being used for, and everyone who was talking about the old Coco development should GTFO.
Ouch.
The old Coco environment still exists today under another name. It's called Stagecast Creator. Somehow, I guess the people of the advanced technology group who were working on this programming language managed to escape with the code base, and it still exists. And the amazing thing is I saw screenshots of it running on modern software, and it looks exactly the same like it did in 1996. It looks horrible.
Really? Oh my god.
It's so hilarious. And that was the brief piece of Mac history I wanted to share with you last week, but forgot about.
So it looks like when we were doing Oracle forms at CJAP during college.
Yeah, I know. It looks terrible.
Oh, man. But which company is the owner of that product right now?
I would have to go look it up, but I think it's something like Stagecast, and I think that's like their only product. I believe it's actually like moderately popular in education in certain places because of how simple it is to use. And because how you can model, many of the examples you could find for that app were like science simulations. That's why the games were basically called simulations, because you could use them in education to demonstrate various scientific things, I guess.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
It is, but it's still very primitive even today, like 20 years later.
Can you imagine that running on iPads or stuff like that? Like with all of those Apple demos showing kids learning with iPads?
Luckily, iPads can't run Netscape plugins or Java applets.
Yeah.
And that's all I have for follow-up.
Good. So, like I mentioned during the opening, this week, Yannick and I wanted to speak about the March 9th Apple event, which is currently today. So, we decided to do a special episode, and also we wanted to mention that since Yannick is back from Japan, we'll be back on our two-week schedule. So, correct. Before going back on some, on our normal schedule of doing topics, we decided to just jump on that big news today, from today.
Right. So, where do you want to start?
I'm currently looking in my notes, and what I wanted to do is I wanted to go in the
chronological.
Thank you, Yannick. So yeah, that work from the event. So let's start with the Apple TV.
Okay.
Yeah. So first question is, I'm sure you'll answer what I was expecting with Apple TV updates is, what the fuck, Apple TV updates?
Well, it's pretty evident that Apple has something completely ready for Apple TV. It's just that they haven't signed the deals to make it worth releasing yet, like with content companies. I believe HBO Now might be the first step towards that, but for now they're sort of coasting on the third generation Apple TV.
Yeah, indeed. And I guess after all of those big names that they mentioned, HBO Go is a big one in the US.
Right. Well, this isn't HBO Go because they already had that, I believe. It's HBO Now, which is different because now you don't need a cable subscription. The big asterisk, of course, is this means nothing to us because we're in Canada.
Exactly. It's US only, and the rest of the world has to wait for it. So before I made that mistake again, like, HBO Go is HBO on the go, but you need to have a cable subscription with HBO Go HBO enabled.
Right.
But that one will be Netflix like in a way. So you will only need the internet connection, whomever will provide it to you, and you'll just pay HBO Now to have access to the HBO collection.
$15.99 a month, and you have HBO content, all of the movies, all of the TV shows in their library available to you streaming via Apple TV, and only via Apple TV, which is surprising.
Yeah, I'm eager to see if they'll move to the iPad and iPhones too.
Oh, well, actually, I meant like they're the exclusive partner, but they have iOS apps. I mean, they're exclusive to Apple.
Oh, right. I remember, because like during the event, it was pretty clear it was like on Apple devices, but without saying that, hey, there's iOS apps.
Oh, they showed them during the presentation, and if you go to the website, they have screenshots.
Okay. So let's jump to the Mac.
Wait, we didn't mention the price drop.
Oh, yeah. See, like, so, it's so much small news about the Apple TV that I just forgot those.
Right. So it went down from $99 for the third generation Apple TV to $69 for presumably the same unit. It's the same unit, basically. They haven't announced any new hardware at all. The interesting thing about this is it makes it a little bit more competitive with like the other boxes, like the Amazon Fire TV, the Roku, Chromecast is sort of a different thing and it's a lot cheaper. But like when my mom heard this, because my mom and my dad were watching the keynote with me, my mom mentioned like she was surprised that they got the price so low, but she doesn't actually know how low the competitors' prices are. So I was like, that's still pretty expensive for a TV thing these days. But I think it's well worth it at $69 for the Apple TV, even though I think the Apple TV has some UI problems that need examining, because like just adding channels to the home screen doesn't scale very well, and without any kind of universal search, it's a giant pain to know where to look for things. And not to mention, many of those just aren't interesting at all anyway.
Yeah, interesting to you.
Right.
Like there's a lot of diversity, and they want to... I don't think right now they have let's say, like, mainstream, not capabilities, but mainstream goal with all of those channels. But I agree with you that, like, it, that home screen has stopped scaling for at least a year or a year and a half. Because in the last year, they ramp up on adding new channels maybe every month, I would say.
Yeah.
Or at least there's new stuff every other month in the maximum. It's like, it's funny enough, like, these days I am using Netflix like a couple of days of per month. And every time I open my Apple TV, I'm like, whoa, there's a new channel that I don't care about. But at the same time, even if I don't care about it, I'm like, there's yet another segment of the population that Apple is trying to get to use the Apple TV.
Yeah, well, it's particularly easy to notice if you actually hide all the channels you don't care about in the menu, and then all of a sudden you show up to the Apple TV and there are 50 new channels there waiting for you, and you're like, when the hell did these come up?
Yeah, I wanted to do that at some point, but I'm so, like, I'm honestly so lazy to do it, because, like, the menu to hide those icons is pretty a pain in the ass, and I'm sure this will be like, and there's no hide everything and unhide just one. You need to go one by one. I want to hide this one and this one and this one and this
well,
one.
Well, it's just a big list of them, so you just press down, enter, down, enter, down, enter.
Yeah. Whatever.
I mean, it's not as bad as you think, but it's still kind of long because of how many channels there are.
Yeah, right now I know when there's new channel when the list moves, and Netflix, the Netflix icon is not at the same place or something. Sometimes they did change the other once or twice. I'm like, huh, something happened. And I'm like scrolling the list like, oh, that's why they reordered these channels and add the new one and blah, 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 blah.
I think if you move them to the start of your list, they don't get reordered if new channels get added, because they just get added to the end. So pro tip for everyone.
Good. So that is going to be my homework for the week.
Yeah. So after Apple TV, what did they have again? Max?
Yeah, they did. Obviously, they did retail updates, but...
Yeah, but that was before Apple TV.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, you're right. So after that, they moved to the Mac lineup. And honestly, I forgot the order. So I'll start from MacBook Airs to MacBook Pros to the new MacBook.
It's basically the opposite, but
yeah, whatever. So I wanted to do that order because the first two are pretty simple. Just
yes,
they bumped the CPU on the MacBook Airs and the MacBook Pro 13-inch.
Yes,
they also updated both of those machines to Thunderbolt 2. I know only the Air, because the MacBook Pro was already on Thunderbolt 2, and also they added this new trackpad, which they call it the Force Touch trackpad. But we'll talk about that when we talk about the new
MacBook.
So I know that you were waiting for those new Macs, even if you were waiting about that new written up MacBook, but since your iMac died, you were eagerly waiting for those.
Right. So as soon as my bank transfer completes, I'm going to buy a new MacBook Pro, basically. I'm going to go with the high-end 13-inch MacBook Pro. It seems like, unfortunately, Apple is sort of treating the 15-inch MacBook Pro like they were treating the 17-inch when they introduced the Retina MacBook Pros, which is to say, it seems like they want to phase them out, or they just don't care about it right now. It might also just be that the Broadwell chips that would be relevant to such a laptop just aren't released yet, because goddamn, they fucked up that release so bad, Broadwell.
to be honest, I wanted to do a check before we started, but didn't have the time. But I'm pretty sure that it's going to be a delay in the quad-core Broadwell processors. Because if you go take a look at the current lineup, you see that the 13-inch MacBook Pros are only using the dual-core processors.
Right.
And if you move to the 15-inch, it's all quad-core. I don't know if there's a BTO option for the 13-inch model.
I believe it's also dual-core.
It's also dual-core, so...
I believe so.
So, like, on the first look, it will suggest that there's still some delay for those new Intel chips, and
that's why, Intel.
Yeah, and that's why the 15-inch devices were not updated this month.
But I am really tired of waiting, because it's been like what, a year and a half, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, it's been a year since my iMac died, but I've been wanting to buy a MacBook Pro since before my iMac died.
Yeah, exactly. I remember we started to have this discussion before we recorded the first pilot that we published 2 weeks ago. So yeah, around December 2012, I would say.
That sounds maybe a year too early, but...
Yeah, maybe. Oh, whatever. Math is hard.
Yeah, math is hard. So I'm going to be going with a high-end 13-inch. The only change I'm going to make to that configuration is max out the RAM, because I believe that if I max out the RAM, I'll get more longevity out of the machine that way. I guess there is a CPU upgrade, but I don't think it would make enough of a difference, especially since it's dual core to dual core. I mean, if there was a quad core option, maybe I'd consider it, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So that's probably the machine I'm going to go with, assuming nothing changes until my money gets in my account so I can buy it.
And yes, you're right. So the BTO option is to go from a dual core 2.9 to a 3.1.
Right.
But it's an i7.
Yes.
That's the difference. So you go from core i5 to core i7. And yes, it's going to be a good idea to max out the RAM to 16 gigs.
Right. Especially since I'm basically only using this laptop for Xcode stuff. Sort of makes sense. Especially like right now, I can basically not program in Swift on my laptop, because as soon as I type like 3 characters, it stalls the entire machine.
Oh, no. Don't get me started on Swift, please. Okay, I'll have a small tangent about it. So for the last week at work, I was like experimenting with a new payment terminal that we need to integrate. And I was doing some Swift in the playground, and in the hour I had to work with the playground, it crashed 3 times.
Yay.
Like I was typing, and then something happened in my big loop, and Excel crashes.
Yep.
And then
fun times.
Yeah, it's funny because it depends, but like if you want to, if you're cold on a cold day in Canada, just hug your MacBook Pro while it's running a playground, and then you'll be fine.
Right. If you don't have access to Xcode, or you're a PC user and you're somehow listening to this podcast, the alternative is to compile GHC, the Haskell compiler, which is nuts and takes forever to compile and burns a lot of CPU cycles. Nice cheap heating for the winter. Let's get back to the event. So next up, new MacBooks, which funnily enough, the ATP tipster was right.
Yeah, it was partially right.
Right. So if you don't know what ATP is, it's the Accidental Tech Podcast. You can listen to it at atp.fm. And last week, an anonymous tipster wrote in to talk about what may be happening to the MacBooks. And surprise, surprise, basically everything except for one small detail was right.
Yeah, and I would even go as far as saying that the USB hub he or she was referring to could be assumed to be those kind of, they call it multi-display accessory or multimedia accessory. The one to plug in a USB something plus power plus HDMI or VGA, depending on which one you buy, which is a big dongle with those dongles are weird. Can you imagine buying those?
Well, what I would prefer and what I might actually buy for my MacBook Pro eventually is like those Thunderbolt docks that you can get. Those are a lot more physically appealing than whatever the stupid USB dongle looks like.
Yeah, exactly. But honestly, it will depend on if you're planning to buy an external monitor or not. Because if you do, I will strongly suggest to buy a Thunderbolt display, which comes with a Thunderbolt dock, in a way.
Yeah, I don't really like external displays because they're big.
Yeah, but it's pretty nice to edit Xibs in on that screen.
I guess, but then what's the point if it's not Retina?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not looking at another monitor that's not Retina. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm a Retina elitist now. Let's actually move on to actually talk about the laptop instead of talking about the ATP tipster.
What's new about that new laptop?
Well, lots of things. First of all, it's gold. Well, it's available in gold, which makes me want to gouge my eyes out because of how repulsive it is.
But have you seen the picture of the space gray model?
I know you like space gray. I don't like space gray in general. I preferred like the black model iPhone 5 to the space gray. I just don't like the space gray.
I do agree with you on that. I would imagine that device as the iPhone 5 black, and it will be way better than a space gray model. But Federico Vitici posted images of it, and depending on the angle, like it looks like the black iPhone 5.
Yeah, but that's the problem. Depending on the angle, if it actually was like the black iPhone 5, it would be like a black iPhone 5 from every angle.
I know, but even then, like you kind of have a compromise here. But
well, I just get it silver because it's the least bad of the options.
I would like to see that device in person because I wanted to know. I would like to know if the silver is the normal MacBook Air, MacBook Pro silver.
I would imagine it is.
Yeah, I would imagine too.
I mean, like, I'm holding my iPhone 6 next to my MacBook Air right now, and they're basically the same.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
I mean, Johnny likes consistency, except when he doesn't.
So, after speaking about the tipster and the color of those MacBooks, we will need to speak about the content of that computer.
Okay, well, it's thin. Very thin.
Very light, too?
Very light, yes. It's basically more MacBook Air than the MacBook Air, which is still in the lineup for some reason.
And it's still called the MacBook Air.
MacBook Air, right. But strangely enough, what distinguishes the now only MacBook from the MacBook Air is that instead of having lots of air inside the device, it has batteries. Custom battery technology where they cut up the batteries into basically layers to try and fit as much battery into grooves within the unibody construction of a laptop as possible, which is great. And I made a big joke that this is the reason that they stole people from Tesla because they're battery experts. And they, of course, you would hire them from Tesla to make this stupid battery technology in this new MacBook and not a car.
Yeah, I wish they should have made some kind of reference Tesla engineer or something while being like, hey, we have new batteries with new technology. But yeah, it's not Apple-like.
No, but it would have been hilarious.
Indeed.
What else? Is the USB-C seriously the only port on it? Because like I thought I saw a headphone port.
No, there's an headphone port. You're right. So okay. On one side, there's the USB 3.0 Type-C, and on the other side is the audio jack plus the two holes for the microphones. Yes.
Okay, that sounds good. Because like Phil Schiller made a joke about like buying Beats headphones or speakers, and I started laughing so hard because nobody in the audience said anything or laughed or anything. And B, I was like, oh, that's weird. There's a headphone port during the Johnny Ive video. And I just wasn't expecting it because he made that dumb joke. I should say, if you haven't watched the Apple event at all, they've innovated in the domain of dad jokes. It's crawling with dad jokes everywhere. It's amazing. Internal Polyphonic Room chat was talking about how dad joke it was all the time, and it was really terribly bad dad jokes all the time. I think I've said dad jokes too many times, so let's move on to the next point.
Before we do, imagine that kind of event that happened today with Eddie Q introducing iWork.com. Oh, was it iWork.com or iWork for iCloud?
No, iWork.com was Phil Schiller. You have not seen the iWork.com introduction video.
No, so I'm referring to the iWork for iCloud then.
Yes, oh, God, that was bad.
It was from, Eddie Q did it.
Right, because I believe iWork.com was I can't believe it's a web application over and over again.
So there's no dad joke in that.
Phil being Phil.
Exactly.
Oops. Something fell on the ground.
So the next thing we teased a little bit when we spoke about the new MacBook Pro is Force Touch trackpad?
Force Touch trackpad, right. And the Taptic Engine, which is inside it. Should I explain this?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so when they introduced the Apple Watch back in, I believe it was October, right? Sounds about
September.
Right. September?
Yep.
Right. When they introduced the Apple Watch has two new technologies in it. It has the Taptic Engine, which basically replaces the vibration engine of the iPhone. And what it does is it gently taps you on the wrist instead of vibrating, which can be jarring if you've used like a Pebble or some other smartwatch which vibrates. It can be unpleasant at times. So that's the Taptic Engine. And there is Force Touch on the Apple Watch, which is a way of distinguishing hard presses on the screen from soft presses. So basically pressure sensitivity, except Apple has a cool buzzword for it. And what they've done is because the trackpad was too, not the trackpad, because the new MacBook was too thin to actually accommodate a regular trackpad, they had to adapt this Taptic Engine technology and Force Touch technology to, use the Force Touch to detect presses on the trackpad, and B, use the Taptic Engine to give you haptic feedback when you press it so that it doesn't feel like you're just pressing hard against a piece of glass.
And the real advantage here is that the trackpad is not moving anymore.
Correct. And it's just thinner, so they can fit it into this new MacBook, which is too thin to accommodate a normal trackpad. So this is what is in the new no suffix MacBook, and also in the upgraded, I'm not entirely sure if the Airs got it, but I know at least the Pros got it. The 13-inch only, though.
I don't think they updated it in the Air. I'm doing some scrolling. Let's take a look. But yeah, you're right. So I honestly think that they're for the 15-inch MacBook Pros, they are just waiting for everything to come. So new CPUs will include those new trackpads and maybe faster flash memory, because they did bump the flash speed on the 13-inch MacBook Air,
right?
Too. So I'm guessing, yep. Nope. It's still the multi-touch trackpad for the new MacBook Air.
Right. So it's only on the 13-inch MacBook Pro and on the new suffixless MacBook for now. Are we leaving out any big points? Oh, right. It's a Retina MacBook Air. Well, wow. Retina MacBook.
Yeah.
We forgot to mention that because, like, it's sort of the new normal in the Apple world to have a Retina display everywhere.
That, and you forgot about the keyboard, too. They did some tweak on the keyboard to make the keyboard keys more stable and obviously to reduce the key travel because the laptop is thinner.
Right.
And that's probably it.
What do you think? Well, actually, we forgot the biggest thing, which is it only has a USB-C port and nothing else, which is sort of a big deal. So if you are not aware what that means, basically there's this new standard. It's called USB-C, and it can accommodate a bunch of different technologies over one port. I believe the list is DisplayPort, Ethernet. Damn it. What are the other ones?
USB and power.
USB and power, right.
Obviously. So it seems to me that it's like the like USB version of Thunderbolt with power.
Correct.
With a smaller cable.
Right, and this is not some BS port that Apple made up, though usually those are better than the standards. But somehow, miraculously, the industry has come across a standard that is not complete bullshit. And it has made it into an Apple laptop somehow, which is amazing.
Remember the wording they used, like, we work with the industry, like... AKA, we forced the industry to use that type of connector, or like to have a reversible connector, because we know that's what
well,
we want.
Well, it's sort of like the NanoSIM spec, which is like Apple was pushing very, very hard for their version of the NanoSIM spec. Nokia had a different one. So then Apple just shipped a phone that used their own standard, and then everybody was like, well, I guess we have to do this now. Thanks, Apple. Or also recently, WebKit has also been a victim of similar accusations.
Oh, why is that?
It's complicated, and I don't want to take the show completely overboard. But basically, WebKit has a lot of market share, and now they can do basically the same things that IE did back in the old days by just saying, well, we don't want to do this, and everybody just doesn't do it. But of course... The thing is, like, Apple's reasons for not wanting to do things are usually pretty sound, but web standards people aren't very welcome to the idea of hearing that their ideas aren't good.
But why Apple doesn't support Elgvar-Biz? Come on, Apple! Come on!
Oh, don't get me started on that. It's like the year... was it the year we went to Google I.O.?
I didn't remember. To Google I.O.
Well, not you, but Shannon and I. No, it wasn't. The year they gave the Evo 4G, which I believe was the year before we went.
So 2010.
2010. In the same conference, I think like Google was saying, everybody adopt WebM for your videos on the internet. And at the very same time, Android didn't support WebM because there was no decent hardware decoding for it. And software decoding was too slow to actually implement on Android devices at the time. So if you actually pushed WebM video to your website, you couldn't actually watch it on Android, which is weird, inconsistent messaging, but that's because Google is weird.
Yeah, and to add on Google weirdness is, I think they backtrack on YouTube and YouTube plus WebM recently, if I recall correctly.
I don't know about that. I just know that YouTube is embracing HTML5 recently, and I would like to congratulate them for that because, like, seriously, it's 2015, guys. Stop using Flash.
Yeah. Yeah. But sadly, even if they start to use HTML5, you're not able to get higher resolution than 720p with HTML5. At least that's what I saw. Like, that's what I'm currently experiencing.
Weird.
So you're saying that you're able to go to 1080p?
I basically don't use YouTube except on the iPad now, so I don't really notice anything.
Maybe that's the reason.
Anyway, there were other things announced at that event, namely a little watch.
Yeah, but before we go to that, I just wanted to add something to the USB Type-C connector.
Oh, sure.
Something that makes me sad a bit is...
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
Yeah,
with this.
It's the day has come for our friend, and our friend is MagSafe.
Oh, actually, that's not what I thought you were going to talk about, but go ahead.
Yep, so we haven't experienced this connector in real life yet, but something that I really loved about MagSafe is the magnetic part of it. Like, yes. I'm sure that I save a couple of laptops because of that connector.
Mm hmm.
And now I would like to see or experience the rigidity of the connection between the connector and the device. I'm guessing that since that laptop is small, portable, and it has all day battery, aka 9 to 10 hours of web browsing, the Apple morally sees it as an iPad with a keyboard running OS X. So I'm guessing that their logic here is you use it all day without the cord, You come back from home, from school, whatever. You just plug it in, go to bed, whatever. Charge it with your Apple Watch, and then next morning you unplug it, go live your life.
Actually, I have another possible reasoning for this. And this is, MagSafe was developed back in the day when laptops had actual hard drives. And now that the new MacBook has zero moving parts, there's a lot less of a case to be made that, like, if your laptop falls over, it's going to die from mechanical failure.
No, but now it's going to die with a broken screen. It's not going to die, but you have a broken screen.
Yeah, but, like, that happens even if you don't have a power cord plugged in. Like, just ask all the crazy people who have iPhone screens that are shattered or iPads that are shattered. Like, they're everywhere. I don't know how it happens because it still hasn't happened to me. Now it's going to happen because I've jinxed it by talking about it on this podcast.
Time to
but I mean, one. Like, yeah, but I don't think it's as big of a problem as people think.
I guess we'll see in the coming years. Like, my gut feeling is the naming of that product suggests that the MacBook Air is going away and that laptop will replace it. So we might see that Type-C connector going to since I think that this device will replace the MacBook Air, so all of the normal MacBook will use that connector, and we'll see, maybe in a couple of generations the MacBook Pro will move to that connector too.
I'm not sure about that. And the reason for that is Thunderbolt can't go over the thing, over USB-C. And Thunderbolt is actually sort of important for pro workflows. And if you're going to call this a MacBook Pro and not a MacBook prosumer, then maybe it would be a good idea to keep Thunderbolt there. And Thunderbolt does a better job for that stuff than USB-C. I guess, like, maybe you could turn the power cord into that. I don't know.
Yeah, and also I fear that if Apple makes the move to Thunderbolt as a prosumer/pro connector, its fate will be the same as FireWire 800, aka nobody will use it.
I don't know. Pros really like their Thunderbolt stuff.
No, and I honestly understand them. Like, Thunderbolt is awesome. Like, the connection speed are right now as fast as those as the USB 3.0, if I recall correctly. Like,
yeah.
I think there's no longer speed difference. But I think one advantage that Thunderbolt still has is the daisy link.
Yeah. Daisy chaining.
Daisy
right.
chaining, pardon me. So yeah, so the ability to daisy chain to on one bus you can daisy chain two or three devices, if I recall correctly.
I think it's like four or something. If you go to the Macworld website, we should probably put this in the show notes. There was once an experiment where they actually took a look at how many peripherals they could connect to a Mac Pro by A, connecting to all of the Thunderbolt ports on the Mac Pro, and B, daisy chaining as many devices as possible until the OS wouldn't recognize any more devices. And it's like this crazy giant hydra of devices coming out of the Mac Pro, and it's a very interesting photo, so we should put it in the show.
Yeah, I remember that photo. It was funny because it looked like an octopus, the way that they placed the device around the Mac Pro, so it was funny. Yeah.
Yes. I guess I have one last note on this MacBook. Which is, well, I have 2 points, really. I'm surprised it's not ARM. I know why it's not ARM, but I'm disappointed that it's not ARM. It would have been a good time to go ARM. And I feel like the specs for this machine are just disappointing. But they're disappointing in the same way that the first generation MacBook Air specs were disappointing. The problem is, like, they've already been through the first generation MacBook Air, so they should have, like, seen that it's not necessarily the best idea to ship a product that isn't really ready for primetime first generation. But I guess that's, like, how Apple introduces the concept before it's ready for fruition, I guess.
Yeah, and also I think the fact that right now this MacBook will only support flash storage will greatly help its cause. Because the main, the biggest problem with the first gen MacBook Air was the hard drive in it. And the fact that it was like, you put it like on a table that was directly under the sun and you were not able to use your computer. Even if it's, it was closed for like 4 hours.
Right. But I think like if you were to compare the performance of the chip inside the iPad Air 2 and the performance of the 1.2 gigahertz Core M, which is inside this MacBook, I think they'd be so close that it might not even be worth the trouble of going towards Intel. And that's sort of confusing to me why they would go that route instead of just going to ARM and saying, here is the clear delineation between pro and consumer. Consumers can go with ARM, and developers, get your shit together and get your apps ready for ARM in a month. But yeah.
So if we stay on your tangent for a bit, you're suggesting that if they would have went for ARM for that device, they would have done OS X on ARM?
I seriously expected them to do it with this laptop.
That's pretty interesting. Even if there's still rumors that a bigger iPad is coming.
Yeah, I don't see how that is related at all. Like, iOS is OS X running on ARM. It's just not running the Finder and stuff. But, like, you can run OS X on ARM. It can happen. Just build it.
But I don't think there's a case for that. Or maybe I'm, like, tunnel thinking right now, but like with all of those technologies that Apple introduced in iOS 8 and 10.10, like it seems that they wanted to make that distinction. Like mobile stuff is on iOS and computery stuff is OS X. And then we'll bring new technologies to make the communication between those devices and bring the advantages of one platform to the other and vice versa while keeping those same base.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with you just with what you just said. But like, let me ask you this question. What does changing the underlying instruction set change to that equation? Absolutely nothing. Like it's still the same product. It's just the processor that's running that it's running on has changed. And like they have gotten so screwed by Intel this generation.
Yeah, indeed. But for which benefit? Except that they will be
I think on the pro end, there is a more interesting case to be made for Intel because they have the performance, right? And it's a bigger laptop, so they have more room for battery and everything. But like for the MacBook as it exists, this very product that we're talking about right now, the specs are so bad that you would get probably better, if not equal performance, by going with the ARM option. And if you're going with that, then if you're going to make that kind of product, then just go with ARM. It's like, it seems like a no-brainer to me.
I'm starting to understand your point now. But at the same time, I'm still thinking about those bigger iPad rumors and bigger iPad rumors with maybe a stylus slash keyboard stuff. And then if they start to move into that direction, I would see that your point is more valid. Like, I don't think there's a place.
No, but I'm not advocating for OS X on a tablet at all.
No,
like,
no,
that
I
is not on the table.
No, I see. I understood that. But, like, I can see why they created that device with the heritage of OS X right now. But if they want to move on the direction of a bigger iPad, then it makes that new MacBook less compelling, less interesting, and then it makes your argument more strong.
Well, you keep hearing people bitching about the iPad being a consumption device. Because like there are tech writers and writers like having a physical keyboard and they think that lugging a physical keyboard together with your iPad is a waste of space when you can just carry a MacBook. I mean, like the device is basically made for tech journalists. It's not made for like people who like the iPad.
Yeah. I guess that's something we'll see in the future. Like if Apple moved to a bigger iOS devices, or they just leave everything that is above 10 inch to laptop and OS X.
And the other thing that Marco Arment pointed out on Twitter is that the lineup of SKUs for the MacBook is particularly interesting. It's a lot more like iOS devices. It's pick your color and pick the storage size. And if you pick the bigger storage size, well, it's moderately faster.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very much more like an iOS device product SKU lineup than it is a Mac one, where you can actually do build-to-order stuff and select how much RAM is in it and everything. This is basically storage space and tiny speed boost.
Exactly, and especially if you compare the MacBook page to the iPad Air 2 page. Like, they use the same layout and the same structure. So the first line is colors. The second line is storage. Third line is your price.
That's right. Well, Ben Thompson wrote an article a while back, and I'm going to have to find it for the show notes, about how, like, going further into the future, the MacBook basically becomes a big iPhone accessory. And he wrote this like months ago. And if you look at what he described in that article, he basically described this laptop. So there you go. Ben Thompson can see the future. He is right about so many things. So you should read his blog.
The problem when you say that iPad iPhone accessory, when you speak about the MacBook, is I can only see those like Asus phone phablet, and then the mixing.
Oh, yeah,
them
the
with
pad phone and the phone pad.
The pad phone and phone pad. Oh, those devices with the I think it was like some kind of weird keyboard case, and then you can pop out the phone.
Yeah, I don't remember what the name of the one with the keyboard case where you can basically go from phone to tablet to laptop.
It's like combine a Surface with a Nokia phone, and that's it. From Asus. Yeah, running Android.
Basically. Asus is nuts.
Oh, man. But it's been a while since they updated that device.
I've seen some. I saw some new ones, like in Japan recently.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they're still making them, except nobody cares.
Huh?
Because it's too weird. But like, there's a guy on my Twitter who like buys all of them, and he gives them great reviews each time, and I'm like, seriously?
Oh, poor guy. At least we need to put these reviews in our show notes.
They're in Japanese, though.
Oh, okay then. Never mind.
Okay, so let's move on to Apple Watch, I guess?
Yeah.
So which Apple Watch are you buying?
We talked a bit during the day, you and I, about that, and I think your decision's pretty made up, right?
Well, it was until I saw prices in Canadian dollars.
Yes, something we didn't mention till now is most of the price we refer during the show is in US dollars, and then we don't want to mention the Canadian dollars price, the Canadian price, because they make them I have no words to say about them except
let's just say this: they readjusted the Canadian prices because of the exchange rate with American dollars, and let's just say that, well, the exchange rate with American dollars can fuck off right now. Though I do actually like it because I get paid in American dollars and I get more money out of it.
Yep. The problem is when I want to buy stuff in the US, it's like, oh no.
Yep.
So let's put that Canadian economy aside. And right now I'm torn between two models. I saw the Space gray, like the Apple Watch Sports Space gray model. It looks pretty nice. Currently comparing it with where's that one? Still, like, if I go in the Apple Watch collection, I'm still torn between the bright blue leather loop. Or the, I think it's the modern, no, the other one. It's the midnight blue modern buckle.
Oh, yes.
But Don't forget that the modern buckle is only available on the 38mm device.
Yes.
And the leather loop is only available on the 42.
Yes.
And I saw some tweets exchange between Mark Orman and John Gruber that they were saying that the modern buckle band is 180 millimeters long.
No, that was John Gruber talking about his own wrist circumference.
Yes, but I earlier it was mentioned that's the length of the loop of the of the band. So that's why Marco then replied shit to him. Yeah, so I cannot find those numbers. So maybe they got it from like people that were at the Apple event.
There's a webpage on the Apple website where you can see the sizing graph for the bands.
Okay.
And the millimeters are all written there.
Hmm. That's interesting. So yeah, right now I'm torn between those two models. Which one of them makes me cry? The second one makes
Does it make you cry because of the price?
Yes.
Yeah.
So one of them makes me cry, one of them makes me half cry, and the other one is okay. It's fine. And the if you want the appropriate order is like the Apple's the modern buckle is the one that makes me cry, the leather loop makes me half cry, and the sports one makes me not cry.
Yeah, basically that.
Basically.
So I'm probably going to go with a sport for a number of reasons. First of all, the sports band in pink is actually it looks pretty good. So I wouldn't be too offended wearing that.
You love pink.
I love pink. The other thing is I'm still not entirely convinced on the usefulness of the Apple Watch, and I would feel bad spending like $900 on the watch that I actually truly want if it turns out to not actually be useful at all. That would suck. But my true one that I absolutely want is the 38mm Apple Watch in stainless steel with the midnight blue modern buckle, which I have stated on a previous episode of this podcast. It is gorgeous, and it is my favorite one that is not in the edition collection. Because the midnight blue and gold one in the edition collection is fantastic.
Yeah, the classic buckle, right?
It's over $10,000.
But Apple can still say that the most expensive product in their lineup is the Mac Pro.
It is. You can build one for what? It was $27,000, I think? $23,000?
Yeah, $23,000, $24,000. It was pretty close to the... which one is the most expensive? Oh, it's the red one.
Yeah.
The bright red modern buckle.
Right. Which is somehow like $21,000 in Japan.
Yeah, and it's $22,000 in Canadian dollars.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think we'll be buying those watches.
Have you been having heated debates with people on Twitter about the pricing of the Apple Watch Edition?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I have.
Really?
Yeah, lots of people have been telling me that Apple is crazy for pricing them that high, and I argue that it is not that crazy.
No, but like, after I read Gruber's analysis before the event, and he was mentioning that those prices can go as high as $20,000, but he was suggesting that it will go as high as $20,000 with maybe a surprise band, which he was suggesting that they would maybe release the Milanese loop in gold and the
link bracelet
in gold, which did not happen, strangely enough. It's like if you look at the current watch market, like if you go watch at the Rolex stores and Omega stores, they always have especially for men, which is a little bit sexist, but whatever, they always have a the Link bracelet, their own version of it, in stainless steel, and in 10 version of gold. Like, they have, like, pink gold, 24 carats. I don't know if it exists, but they have, like, pink gold, white gold, yellow gold, and, like, yellow gold with diamonds.
Chocolate-covered gold.
Exactly. They have tons of gold options. And like Gruber was saying, like, the, for example, the stainless steel model was around like 5 to 7K, and then you can triple, double or triple the price if you go to the gold option. So with prices ranging from 10K to 17, 18 US dollars, like 17K US dollars, I was not surprised. That's what I was expecting for that model. And even the fact that they were saying that that model is, it will be available in limited quantities in special retail stores that are not ours. And like, they were pretty safe while putting that information out there. They're like, just like, you know, we want to move on that market of luxury watches. Those watches didn't say it directly, but the message was pretty clear. Like, I know you all guys here in the room, you'll freak out when I say 10K, but that's not for you.
Well, interestingly enough, it wasn't written on the slide at all that it was starting at $10,000. And presumably that's so there can't be a photo of Tim Cook standing there with giant $10,000 behind him that everybody can use in their headlines and stuff to make Apple look like crazy people.
Yeah, that's right. And I would even go as far as when Gruber ended his analysis of the price when he said that Apple will have announced the edition price after the event. It will have seemed to me like a good strategy because of that. Because of like people freaking out in the news, and I can already see that like Wall Street Journal with the picture of 10K, and I'm sure they will have been able to took a picture of Tim Cook while doing a funny face the second he just said 10K and then said like, oh my god, see his face, he said 10K with a weird face and then click here.
You won't believe the 10 different ways that Tim Cook introduced this $10,000 gold watch.
And then, oh my god, I can imagine that article. And it's like Photoshop pictures of Tim Cook on the, was it Bloomberg magazine? Or like the one that did...
Oh god, Bloomberg Business Week. I love you.
Business Week. And then using Comic Sans to put their title with bling effect. Oh my god. So yeah,
anyway,
the prices didn't surprise me. The Apple Watch Edition prices didn't surprise me. I will say that the Apple Watch collection prices surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, they were less expensive than I was expecting.
Yeah, same here.
Well, in American dollars they were less expensive than I was expecting.
If you look at the Canadian dollar, the Canadian prices, that was the price I was expecting. In a way, I was not expecting those prices. I didn't want those prices, but eh.
Yeah. So my arguments on the internet with people who think that Apple are crazy mostly boil down to they seem to think that the Apple Watch Edition is targeted towards watch enthusiasts. It's not targeted towards watch enthusiasts. It's targeted towards influential people who wouldn't be caught dead wearing a $349 watch. Like celebrities, models, people who see watches more as fashion accessories than as a hobby or as interesting mechanical devices. And even then, like, traditional watch enthusiasts are coming out and saying, like, the Apple Watch is really built fantastically and it's a very, very well built watch, even though it's not a mechanical watch, which says a lot about the quality of Apple's hardware here. I don't believe people are necessarily wrong when they say like $10,000 is a lot for a device that is going to lose most of its value in the next year. But at the same time, it's targeted at people who, I don't want to say have no sense of value of money because that seems incredibly diminutive, but who make so much money that spending $10,000 on a watch that is going to be less valuable within a year isn't such a big deal. Because they're going to buy them one next year, too.
And also, I would like to add that here in North America, like, the culture of showing off that you're rich is not pretty common. I will say it's pretty socially awkward if you do that.
Right. When like, I say, like, Apple is trying to become a fashion or luxury brand, people say, and that is disgusting. Whereas if you say that in, like, China, they're like, yeah, I understand that Apple is becoming a fashion/luxury brand. That no, is what makes their products more desirable to me.
They don't say that. They say, shut up and take my money. That's it.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Well, the ones who have the money say that.
Yeah, I should obviously
point out.
Yeah, and I think that collection is toward those people. People with money and people
definitely
that, like, people that love blings.
Yes, and if you look at the presentation, there were so many little nods to China everywhere. They opened with a video of China, which we joked was a thing about the old stream on the Apple Watch stream last September when the audio feed was entirely in Chinese for the first hour.
I'm sure they did that on purpose.
Like, they did that. They referenced WeChat during the Apple Watch demo, which I joked that even Apple doesn't want to use iMessage because it never works.
It's funny that they reference WeChat first and not iMessage. Yes.
And it's a huge deal, but I would rather they demo Line in keynote demo, but what are you going to do? So there were so many nods to China that it's very clear that Apple is making a big push in China. The problem is that, like, culture isn't very well understood here, so that whenever Apple does something that makes sense in China, and Apple's biggest market is quickly becoming China, if not is China, it just looks very weird and confusing to Americans.
Yeah, but even if China becomes their first market, they still have to move their thinking in a bit, because, like, for example, like, certain technology that they develop and put out in the world are still US focused, and we have tons of examples of that with Apple, iTunes Radio, right. Apple Pay, like those deals with the HBO and all the most of the content provider with the Apple TV. And if Apple's at certain point make Gene Monster really happy and then announce their like flat screen Apple TV, we already know that it will be US focused first. And it was the same with the iTunes store, the TV show store, the movie store, and like the list of places of underworld that you can buy TV shows and movies on iTunes is pretty low.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think Apple is starting to move their thinking with regards to their product lineup much more, and services much more, in terms of what is going to be, give us a bigger return in China. And I know that certain services are very hard for them to do in China because they're an American company, and China is very protective of its, well, of everything, really.
That's the polite way to say it.
Like, Apple Maps isn't even by Apple in China. It's licensed from a Chinese company because the Chinese government won't let them do their own mapping because they're an external company, right?
Yeah, so, but it is the same for every company, except Chinese one, I would say. Like, Google Maps in China is provided by the same providers as Apple Maps, if I recall correctly. Or maybe a different Chinese one that has been approved by the Chinese government.
Google in China is sort of a big question mark because of how often they go back and forth between we're going in China, we're not going in China. I mean, like, I think they went back and forth like three or four times. So I'm not even sure where they are now. But I wouldn't be surprised if Google Maps isn't even available in China. It's just like there is data visible for China outside of China or something like that. Yeah, anyway, it's very weird. And if you check the maps of China from outside China, you get like Apple Maps data, not the maps data they see in China. It's very strange.
Oh, I see what you mean. So like if you're a Chinese user, you'll see
you get
more.
Completely different data set.
Okay, not more, just different.
Yeah.
And then, okay, I can't understand why. Oh, I see.
So, Apple in China, like, just look at WWDC. Like, every year there's this session which is, like, preparing your products for China. Like, that should tell you how important China is for Apple, that they give it an entire WWDC session as if it was a developer API. Like, they really want developers to embrace that opportunity as much as they do.
Yeah, and those kind of session for, like, translating your app and preparing your app for other markets, it's like...
It's, like, the biggest market to get a boost from if you actually manage to find someone to translate your app, which I have actually considered getting a Chinese translation of EOS done. Maybe not for version 1.0, but at some point. Because, like, you can share GIFs in WeChat, and that would be a big deal.
Yeah, and everybody around the world share GIFs right now.
Everybody loves a good cat GIF.
Aw, cat GIFs. Aw.
Yeah. So, do we have anything else to say about Apple Watch? I guess the third-party apps we haven't touched on at all.
Yeah, I was about to mention apps. Like, the main problem that I had with the... And lots of people had this problem with the initial event, Apple Watch event, is... It seemed that Apple didn't make a good case of the watch. For the watch.
I would argue they still haven't.
Okay. I'm still torn between the two ideas. Like, it's a little bit clearer to me, but still a little bit vague. Like, I see that this watch can do more than the Pebble. But,
yes.
Like, I had issues with the Pebble, like, to make it fit in my lifestyle. Like... it seems to me that they fixed one problem with notification is like on the Pebble, you receive all of the notification. And then on the Apple Watch, you'll be able to do a whitelisting of notification. Like I want just those notifications sent to the watch. And
yeah,
then,
and the impression I get is for at least iMessage and mail, you can do VIPs so that only VIPs go through to your Apple Watch.
Which is really important for me and not for you because I do use iMessage and you don't.
And I don't use email either.
Yeah. I was mostly speaking about iMessage. But can you explain why you still don't see that the use case for the watch? Like, I know you were a Pebble user. And then I'm sure you can see your Pebble lying somewhere on your desk right now.
Well, I'm downstairs right now, so I can't see my desk, but yeah, okay. I know where it is. I don't know. I mean, like, because I'm always sitting in front of the computer all day at home, I don't think I'd have much of a use for a wrist-based computer as much as, like, if I was in Japan on my trip, but, like, every day of the year, then I would have a more compelling reason. But, like, if I'm going to be home all day, there's much less of a compelling reason to be made for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because that's a problem that I have. It's, like, I already see, like, third-party apps that I want to use that I was using on the Pebble. Best example right now is Transit app. Like, they announced that they are making a watch app. And also, they showed a screenshot that they were on the Apple Watch on the demo. They were around the same section as the Uber app. And funny aside, like there was a small, not I will say rumor, like we were chatting with some of my colleagues today because one of my colleagues saw a comment on Twitter about maybe Desjardins supporting Apple Pay.
That would be nice.
Yeah, but what happened is they thought they saw it on the, like, when they show all of the banks supporting Apple Pay. But in the end, they just mixed up something, and we realized that the Desjardins app was on the watch.
Oh.
And then Desjardins later this day, today, announced that they will be doing a WatchKit app. And it should be ready
for... What is their app even going to show, though?
Like, I don't know. Your
bank balance? Like, I don't see...
Or you'll get notification in the same way as Apple Pay when you do transaction or something like that.
Maybe, but that doesn't require an app if it's just a notification.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so if I go back to the use cases that I already have in mind is, first of all, like, I'm around the city, I want to go somewhere, navigation. And if it's car navigation, walking directions, transit navigation, like, those cases, I'm sure I will like it. And even when they were speaking about doing car navigation, and then you're driving with the watch on, and then it buzz on the right side, on the left side, or if you're walking in the city and it will buzz on the right side that you need to go, this seemed pretty nice to me.
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing for me at the last event that they announced.
Yeah. Except that, like, I loved having notification on the wrist, but I had quite a big problem with it at the same time. It's like, there's still a culture of when you look at the watch at your wrist or something on your wrist, people think that you're bored.
Yeah.
And while I was experimenting with your Pebble for a month, it happened at least once a week. That people around me was like, are you going somewhere? Are you waiting for something? I'm like, no. Why? You're looking at your wrist. I'm like, notification. That's it. Like, phone notification. And strangely enough, people understood it. Like, oh, that's nice, but huh.
Yeah, but that's because you work in a geeky environment.
Yeah, I know. But, like, at the same time, they kind of understand the concept pretty fast. Like, I was surprised that they were like, oh, okay, I get it. That's it.
I still think that's because you work with a bunch of developers.
Okay, maybe you're right. But yeah, so I think that's going to be the main problem with the watch. Like, worrying day in, day out, and spending time with friends, and just like, I'm sure it's even nicer. Like, you don't pull out your phone of, like, you just, like, look, take a glimpse at your watch, and that's it. Like, life is good. Nobody will be watching their phone. It's just like, oh, quick look on the watch, and that's it. Go back to life.
Yeah, well, the problem is, for me, with those notifications is, like, very often those notifications are going to be line notifications or chat notifications. And very often I'm going to want to reply, and I'm not going to reply with voice input. So I'm going to have to take out my phone anyway. And that sort of seems pointless. The other thing that is unclear to me is if you have the Apple Watch, configured so that it's paired with your phone, does the phone vibrate too? Because then that would get annoying having both go off at the same time. I would want that to go.
Or even worse, not at the same time, because the notification gets first to your phone and then the time it takes to go to the watch. And
right. It would be like that weird thing when, like, an iMessage shows up on, like, three devices at the same time and then disappears cascading from the three devices slowly.
Oh, this reminds me.
That's when you get iMessages.
Yeah, no. I was not going on that route. Reminds me that, remember with iOS 7, like, Apple teased that they were doing notification syncing, and then never mention it again.
Well, I know to some extent Line is doing some kind of crazy thing that actually seems to work. Like, with Line for iPad, if I actually check messages on my phone and I leave my iPad on the lock screen, I see them disappear.
Yeah, I can see that with Facebook Messenger too.
Right, but I'm not sure if that is something that Apple actually finally followed up on at WWDC last year and we just never heard about it, or if they're abusing weird hacks with background download and silent notifications to basically trick it into doing that thing by resetting notifications.
That's like, something I need to check.
Like, if they never introduced that feature, you could do it that way, I guess, but...
Yeah, I guess too. That was mostly it with third-party apps. Like, it seems to me that the WatchKit apps are still at the same level as extensions a couple of months
ago.
Like, right now we're starting to see the power of extensions. Like, both of us use both of us use workflows. I think I use it a little bit more because of this podcast, but like, that's pretty neat. Like, you can just, I'm working right now on a workflow to, when I'm browsing on the iPad or I open links, like, just to download them, do a nice formatting of the title and all that shit, and like, add the line to a digital document. And then, like, we're seeing developers work on it. Maybe that's a problem right now. Like, Apple is trying to sell us the big picture, and us as, like, geeky people, we're having a little bit of issues, varying degrees of issues with that big picture, because we don't see it right now. And then, maybe a couple of months ago, we'll either A, get it, or B, don't get it, and then that will be it.
Yeah, well, what worries me the most, and what reminded me of this is when you said compared it to extensions, is what is Apple going to approve and not approve on the watch? Because, like, Launch Center Pro is apparently coming to the watch, and I am very, very skeptical that that is going to get approved.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, I would love it if it got approved, but I am very, very skeptical that it is going to be approved.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Like, in the when we started the new year, the Apple developer blog said, like, bring us innovation and we'll check it.
Yeah, well, so yeah.
Maybe that's what it's going to happen. Like, they'll check it and then refuse it. But at least they have checked it.
Yeah.
But let's hope they'll be more flexible with those kinds of ideas, because I do agree with you that...
Well, yeah, I'm just afraid that, like, all of the cool stuff that people could be doing on the watch that would actually be interesting and might actually sell me on the concept of having a little tiny computer on my wrist, like, if all those things get rejected, like, what am I gonna do?
Yeah, indeed. And also, like, while I was thinking about that, like, I can also see, like, home automation being way more powerful with the Apple Watch.
Definitely, but HomeKit products would have to come out for that to happen.
Yeah, indeed. But even then, right now we do have products like the Philips Hue, those like intelligence electrical switch that can be turned on and off via Wi-Fi, and I can see those, like, their experience and their powerfulness will grow, not exponentially, maybe a little bit in the too much side right now, but like, those become more interesting to me with the Apple Watch. Because I'm like, oh, I forgot to turn off the lights. Boop.
Definitely.
And that's it. It's done.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh my God, okay, first world problem, I need to pull out my phone and blah, 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 launch the app. And like, it's just like, you stop for a sec, you do your action, and then you go on with your life. And that's the big picture they're trying to sell, and I think they did it.
Yeah, and just the fact that, like, you can say, hey Siri, good night, and then, like, everything happens to in your house so that you can go to bed and you didn't forget anything, that's actually pretty interesting. Okay, well, I guess I'm the only one excited about that.
No. It's just like, honestly, I have nothing to say because you were on the point and... That was
it. Okay. We did forget to mention one big thing.
Oh, really?
Yes, research kit.
Ooh, right.
That is a huge deal, and people basically forgot about it because they wanted the shiny new thing. But it's a big, big deal.
It is a big, big deal, but I think the presentation was a little bit boring because of that. But, like, it would have been interesting if it was still, like hanging out on the campus at university and, like, oh my god, they're doing a presentation about ways to improve research and iPhone users and blah, blah, blah. But during the Apple keynote, it was kind of weird.
I think if they had a more charismatic presenter on stage instead of, what's his name? I forgot.
Jeff Williams.
Yeah. Jeff Williams, maybe not the most charismatic, but to be fair, it was his first keynote appearance ever. And he's been with the company for, 15, 20 years? So we'll give him a break.
Yeah, indeed.
But wasn't the most interesting presentation, but the implications of what they announced is actually huge. So ResearchKit is a framework that they are going to be introducing soon, which can be used for health applications, which allows researchers in, research facilities and universities and all that stuff to basically ask iOS users for their consent for participating in medical studies. They can subscribe basically to your health data and get regular updates and use that data towards their research. And you get this dashboard inside ResearchKit apps, which basically shows the data you've submitted and the data of the experiments or surveys you've completed, and basically shows you more or less the link between the two things to try and establish that. It gives basically researchers direct access to iPhone owners with health data, and that could be huge.
Did you have the time to look at the release notes today for iOS 8.2?
No.
I'm asking that because during the keynote, they spoke about maybe 4 or 5 apps. In common cases that they think it will be perfect for that. And they said that those apps were launched today on the App Store.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that ResearchKit might be included in iOS 8.2.
It's possible. They could also have just compiled it as a framework internally in the app and just bundled it with it.
Yeah, it could be that too, but it seems to me a little bit weird. But I guess if they want it to be specific for hospital, universities, research center, it will be more logical to go on that route than just putting it as a public API.
Yeah, but we'll see. Another very un-Apple-like thing about this framework is that it's going to be open source, which is crazy. I haven't heard the words open source in a keynote in forever.
Yeah. I remember when they said that, I made the joke about FaceTime. And will they make the same thing as FaceTime as an open protocol or not? Still up in the air, but I think compared to FaceTime, they don't have any competitive advantage to keep it close.
Yeah, and unlike FaceTime, which is when they said, oh, it's going to be an open standard, and then it was like, okay, but we never gave any time frame, so maybe in 2022 it'll be an open standard. Who knows? But on the website, I believe it states within a month or two, they're going to ship the source code for this, which is very interesting.
And then I guess it confirms what you just said, that it just might be a framework.
But you know, when they were leading up to saying open source, I thought they were going to announce an Android version of the framework, actually, which would have been shocking. But the way they phrased the sentence, I was expecting the next words out of their mouth to be, we want to bring this to everyone, so we're going to make an Android version. But just CarPlay for now.
I guess
CarPlay and Beats music.
I guess they're leaving that to the community.
I guess.
Yeah, but at least the community will have documents and code to port to other platforms.
Yeah.
So it's a big step forward.
Yes. Also, a very Apple-like thing to do that what happened during this is to bring up privacy, because as we all know, Google also has health initiatives, except Google wants your data. And Apple made it very clear that they are not interested in your data for any reason, and that the only people who are going to be getting your data are the researchers you've consented to sharing your data with, which is great. And we love privacy.
Indeed. Let's hope they have a good way to let's hope they have a good way to promote this privacy mantra with their partners.
Yeah.
Or I'm sure it will be freeform, and like people that integrate ResearchKit can do anything with the data if you press accept. But finger crossed, maybe that mantra will go to those.
Well, generally, research facilities do a pretty good job with that stuff anyway, so.
And on something that we forgot again to talk, because I think there's nothing else to talk, but we kind of forgot to mention that iOS 8.2 is out now.
Right, so iOS 8.2, it has the Apple Watch app included. It has the Activity app included, though it won't show up until you have paired your Apple Watch, which means you have to wait a month for it to show up.
Yeah, indeed, because I think it's a settings in your Apple Watch that you need to show the app. In the same way that you can disable the Nike Plus app on iOS.
Right.
Speaking of which, I would like to know if they removed that app.
I believe it has been gone for since iOS 7.
Huh.
Something like that.
So yeah, obviously, at least for now, I haven't seen a report of iOS 8.2 crashing and breaking phones, so that's good. That's an improvement, so that's good. But even then, I will suggest your listeners to wait a couple of days. I'm sure when you listen to that podcast, it will be fine to update it. Or at least you'll know if there's something.
Right. Final thoughts on the event. I have to say that I'm surprised that they didn't mention anything about the Apple Store retail experience being changed to accommodate Apple Watch purchases. The equation has changed a little bit because Apple Watch Edition is only being sold in select luxury goods stores and not in Apple stores, so that makes their jobs a little easier. But even then, it doesn't seem like the most optimal experience for buying a watch, even if it's within the range of $349 to $1,000-something.
Yeah, we'll see on April 10th. When the pre-order launch, and we can preview the app by going to our local Apple store. And they said that they will be able to provide each customer, the quote is something like, provide each customer with a preview of the Apple Watch so they can test multiple bands and blah, 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 and so much funny marketing. But as most people know, going to the Apple store is on those days will be crowded and tons of people trying to.
It seems like it's going to be a disaster.
it seems so. Yeah, it's going to be a disaster.
Also surprising on that note is Angela Ahrens. Everybody was expecting her to actually show up on stage and be the first woman SVP to actually talk on the stage of an Apple keynote, and she didn't really appear at all. I mean, I saw her face in the camera pans across the Apple staff row, but basically she didn't go on stage and didn't say a single word the entire thing. She didn't even appear in any of the PR videos. Very disappointing on that front, because I'm very much looking forward to hearing what she has to say about Apple retail.
Yeah, you're right, because recently I was rewatching our video that she made for a Salesforce ad, if I recall correctly, while she was still at Burberry. And that woman needs to speak at those events. She's brilliant. She's brilliant. Yeah. And I can just imagine doing those kinds of Johnny Ive videos, but about the retail experience of the Apple stores.
Definitely. I was sort of disappointed that she didn't say anything during the China one that it opened with. But at the same time, it's an opener video. Usually those are just musical anyway.
And you know what? Maybe it's related to what you just said. Like, right now, we don't know what's the plan with the Apple stores and with watches at the same time. So maybe they're preparing something. And in the next keynote, like, she will be there introducing that, or maybe like reporting back on this new introduction. It will seem in a bit like more logical that she's working right now on her first project as SVP of retail and internet on online stores, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems logical to me that she's working on that and she wants to make a big boom. And then when it's ready, she'll be the one to announce it.
Yeah, but it seems a little strange that it's not ready for the Apple Watch thing, you know? Like, this is the big moment.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The timing is a bit weird.
Yeah, you're right. Timing's a bit weird for that. Evan. I guess we'll see in a month and a half.
Yeah, I guess. Happy birthday to me, by the way, because the Apple Watch is coming out 10 days after my birthday.
Yeah, it's the best gift yourself can offer to yourself.
I guess. Unless someone wants to buy me like a $1,000 watch, please.
Good.
Do you have any final thoughts yourself about the event?
About the event in general, I would say that it felt to me that it was a pretty normal Apple keynote. Like, there was the big punch at the end with the Apple Watch, but we already knew most of it. So yeah, there was I honestly don't have that much stuff to add.
Okay. Well then, we should get to our contact information. If you'd like to find the show on Twitter, you can find it at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast on Twitter. We also have a website at limitlesspossibility.net. You can find the show notes for this very episode at limitlesspossibility.net/10, because it's episode 10.
Yay, we're in the two-number digit.
Yay.
Yay.
It's time to find out if our site breaks with two-digit episode numbers. That's cool.
You're optimistic.
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at Sakurina. That's Sakurina. And you can find Lucolivier at
LUCCONOUCHE. It's at Luconouche.
And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Yay.
Yay.
J'arrête l'enregistrement.
Oh my god.